Blog Talk Radio.
Dr. Anonymous Show 42 for July 31st, 2008, Rural Doctoring.
I'm alright, nobody's heard about me. Why you got to give me a fight?
Welcome to the Dr. Anonymous Show, where we go beyond the blog to bring you the best people in medicine and new media. I am, of course, your humble host, Dr. A, and you can always find me at dranonymous.com. It is 9 p.m. Eastern Time. It feels like 77 degrees Fahrenheit and 24 degrees Celsius. It's partly cloudy here in beautiful northeastern Ohio. Our guest this evening, who will be joining us in mere moments, will be Dr. Teresa Chan, and her blog is called Rural Doctoring. You can find it at www.ruraldoctoring.com. She is a family medicine physician from Northern California, and she is a hospitalist physician, and we'll talk about that when she comes on the show. And I'd like to thank Blog Talk Radio for featuring their show again tonight on their front page. For those of you new to the show, I'm, of course, the host. And I am a family physician in full-time private practice here in northeastern Ohio. And I've had my blog for 2 years, and I've had this show almost for 1 year. And I've also started video posting as well. So very excited about that. If you would like to join the show later this evening, our phone number here is 646-716-9514. There's also a click the talk button noted at the top of the audio window. And if you have a microphone headset, you can join us a little bit later without using your telephone. And you can also enter our chat room. Hello, chat room. So we have 14 people in there already. We have M3 in there, Scan Man, Dr. Val, K. Kamundoya Jamudea. I've been practicing that for 10 minutes now. We have a guest. We have Ramona. We have Argon 52, As the Pump Turns, Chris Sipper. We have our guest, Dr. Rob. Shout out to Dr. Rob. You are the man. And also Rock Dog, the man, is in their chat room. So thank you all for joining us tonight. And I have to tell you, this is the most friendliest chat room around. So even with our guests, shout out to our guests. If you would like to join in the fun and chatting, I encourage you to register to the Blog Talk Radio site. Even I can register. You can register too and join in the fun. So before I bring in our guest, I do want to tell you a little bit about some of our future guests on show number 43, 1 week from today. Will be Dr. Alan Dappin, and he has a website called DocTalker, DocTokr.com, and he has a unique way of delivering health care here in the United States. I don't want to get into it too much, but I encourage you to check out his website before next week's show. And I want to thank our famous Dr. Val for setting up that guest there for me. So the famous Dr. Val, who is now one of the keepers of Grand Rounds. So good luck with that, and very excited about that. So, and show number 44, which will be on August 14, that'll be more of a tech show, and we'll be having live reports from New Media Expo. And we'll be having some of our PodCamp Ohio pals, Angelo and Brandis, will be calling in from Las Vegas, where New Media Expo is, and we'll be getting reports from them, so that'll be exciting. Show number 45 will be the long-awaited guest appearance by Dr. Ramona Bates. Her blog is Suture for a Living. She's in our chat room tonight. Been trying to get her on the show, and she is going to be on our show in 3 weeks. So call the neighbors, and she's coming on the show. Very excited about that. And at the end of August, show number 46, August 28th. Yes, it will be the one-year anniversary of this show. Yes, very excited about that. So mark that on your calendars there, kids, because it's going to be a fun August, and I'm happy to be back. I'll be talking about that a little bit after our guest, about what I've been doing. But right now, right after this short little musical break, will be our guest, Dr. Teresa Chan from Rural Doctoring, or www.ruraldoctoring.com. And let me get this queued up here. You're listening to the Dr. Anonymous Show on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back. Dr. Anonymous Show. And RD, are you there?
I am here.
Wow. Technology.
You
gotta love it.
You gotta love it. I've got this Bluetooth earpiece on, so I hope everyone can hear me.
Are you using your iPhone?
Of course I'm using my iPhone. What else would I use?
I got some flack if I made any iPhone references on this show this evening. So I've made my first reference in the first 30 seconds. So.
Okay, so you're embargoed for another 5 minutes.
That's right. Hey, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's very exciting.
Oh, I'm excited to be here.
I want to thank you for, I think you made a couple calls to our previous shows, and I really appreciate you supporting us for the show and everything that I do. So
this is a great show, and this is a great chat room. Hi, chat room. Hello.
Yeah, this is the best chat room around. So. So you are on vacation. Before we get into things, you're on vacation right now. How long are you on vacation for?
It's going to be 10 days total, and I have to go back to work on next Wednesday.
Wow. When's the last time you took a vacation?
I don't know. My vacations always look like work. But the last time I took a vacation was in, let me get this right, May. I went to New York to see the theater, so that was a vacation. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So you're not at home right now.
No, I'm visiting my mother, and she lives in San Francisco, which is about 6 hours away from me.
Okay. So you have a strong DSL connection right there.
I do, actually. I'm using somebody else's wireless, one of my mother's back neighbors, but it's a pretty good connection.
Illegal wireless. That's awesome.
Yes, well, you know, the walls, this is the thing about living in an urban setting where, you know, your neighbors are close. You can use their wireless.
I see. Now, do you know? Did they get any? I guess that's too far for where the earthquake happened. Was it more south, or I guess I should pay more attention to the news.
It was very much involved in. I think you're talking about the recent earthquake. No, I don't think we felt it. I can't speak for anybody else, but I didn't feel it. But we've had our share of earthquakes here, of course.
Exactly.
Everyone's calling me a wireless pirate in the chat room. I think they're right.
That's right. We will not report you because this is the best chat room anywhere. So,
what happens in the chat room stays in the chat room.
That's right. This is not being recorded, and I can always fix this podcast in post-production, so I can delete out whatever I like. Actually, not really.
The feds won't show up on my doorstep, though.
That's right. Well, let's get into things here. So you are in family medicine. Big shout out to all the family medicine docs out there.
We are awesome, the family doctors of the world.
That's right. So tell me, so how did you choose family medicine as a specialty?
Well, I think the earlier part of my pre-medical life, I was interested in being a psychiatrist because I'd been a psychology major. Then I went through some life changes, and I think I had this idealized notion of the whole Norman Rockwell general practitioner thing. And I entered medical school with that image, and I wanted to be a real doctor, you know, the original concept of a doctor. And I think that's where it all started. And as I went through training and I did all my rotations, I think I liked a little bit of everything, which tends to go along with family doctors. And I especially liked kids and obstetrics. So that's finally what clinched it for me.
Great. Yeah, I have a similar story that I really kind of liked everything. And actually, I had a minor in psychology in college. So I knew I kind of that interested me, but when I went through my third year rotations, kind of similar to what most family docs go through, is like I kind of liked everything.
Right.
And I kind of liked obstetrics too when I was a med student. So that kind of fascinated me.
It's fascinating, and it's weird how fascinating obstetrics can be. I didn't think I would like it as much, and I even thought about matching in it, but I decided not to because I like babies too.
Yeah, hang on for a second.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, Med Peds, Dr. Rob.
Oh, sorry, I had a, I had a, somebody bothered me about something.
No worries.
So are you originally from California?
I am. I was born in Berkeley. And I did a lot of growing up in Arizona, but I returned for college and for working after college and for med school. And I went to my residency in Salinas, which is near San Francisco. So I consider myself a Californian.
Okay. Now, what do you like about obstetrics?
Hinted that you might ask me that question. I was trying to put into words why I like obstetrics, and I don't know. It's messy and it's inconvenient, and the timing's never right. But I like watching a baby being born. I think it's amazing. I still cannot get over my amazement when I see a baby crowning, and I think, wow, here we go. This is it. It works. And I think that the longer I do it, the more I'm really interested in the psychological arc that women go through as they labor and they have their baby, and, you know, they come out the other end. And I have had women, you know, when I hand their baby to them, look like just this look of astonishment on their face, and I think that's great.
Oh, okay. Wow, there's something that really needs to talk to me. Let me do this. Let me put you on hold here, and I will play a little music, and I will be right back here. Don't go anywhere, anybody.
Okay there, Dr. A?
Oh, man. I am. I was going to share this till later, but, I mean, I'm at work. And
oh, I'm sorry.
Because my internet connection at home is not working. And So I came up to work, and then I thought everybody was gone, but somebody had to talk to me about something. So I'm very sorry about that.
That's all right.
Hopefully they'll keep away from me. So this is a great transition here. So before you were at your job right now, were you in private practice? Is that right?
I wasn't in private practice. I was doing primary care at a federally qualified health clinic where they had loan repayments, and that was a great program for me. And I'm still at that clinic, but I am doing prenatal care only. As I developed my hospitalist work, it usually means a week at a time that I'm away from the office, and that's really disruptive for primary care. So ultimately, it was a mutual decision that we decided to have me be a prenatal care provider only.
Oh, okay. And then, so how did you end up at your job at where you're at now?
You mean my hospitalist position?
Yeah, the hospitalist position.
Well, it's interesting. I sort of got grandfathered into it because when I first arrived in this community, the family doctors were providing backup call for people who didn't have doctors or whose doctors didn't admit to our hospital. And then gradually, this hospitalist program became formalized and got developed. And so I sort of got grandfathered in with it because I was willing, to do a lot of coverage. I like hospital work. So I'm waving back at you, by the way. So that's how I got involved with it. And it's been quite a learning experience and a fairly successful program for the last couple of years. Things are changing, of course. Now, I wrote about it on my blog, and I'm not sure how it's going to turn out, but I think I'm going to stay in hospitalist medicine for right now.
So how big is the hospitalist? I mean, how many hospitalist physicians are at your hospital?
We have five, and it is a tight, compact, lean little program. And the reason for the big change that's coming up is that two of our full-timers decided to resign. So we were left unable to staff it, and so my hospital is bringing in an agency to take over the administration and the staffing.
Okay. And I know there are people in this chat room, and people listening to my show who are not in medicine. How would you describe a hospitalist physician? Or let me put it this way, when you see a patient in the hospital, how do you describe what your role is in their care?
Well, what I usually say is I tell them, I ask them, first of all, who's your primary care doctor? And they tell me Dr. So-and-so. And I say, well, my name's Teresa Chan, and I'm the doctor who covers for Dr. So-and-so when his patients have to come to the hospital. And if they ask further, I usually tell them that this allows Dr. So-and-so to stay in the office and be available to them there. So I would describe overall a hospitalist as a doctor who specializes in the care of patients who are in the hospital, and makes it possible for the primary care doctors to stay in the office. So,
So just to clarify, then you only see patients in the hospital. You don't have your own clinic. You don't have your a way outside the hospital where you see patients. You only see patients in the hospital.
Exactly. And sometimes I get people who ask me, well, can I see you, as my regular doctor? And I have to explain to them, again, that I don't keep office hours. It gets a little confusing because I do prenatal care, so I do have a presence in an office, but it's only for prenatal care.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one elderly couple, and the man was he drove a hard bargain. He was trying very hard for me to agree to see him, just him and his wife. And he would pay me out of pocket to see me.
Yeah, because you're so darn good.
Oh, I am so darn good. No, I don't know. I think we just got along. But he's quite a character. And it took me all – I had to say no several times. He drove a hard bargain for sure.
So then, how many hospitalists deliver babies then? You're the only one, or –
I'm the only one right now. My baby delivering and my hospitalist work is actually separate, although I usually overlap them because both of them may demand my presence in the hospital, so I might as well overlap them. My colleagues who are delivering babies are entirely separate. They include family doctors who are no longer providing inpatient care, and I take care of their patients as a hospitalist. But the baby section, that's just me. Everybody thinks I'm crazy.
Mm. Wow. And I think you talked about this on your blog. And I presume then those are two separate call schedules. Or when you're working as a hospitalist, do you also take obstetric call then, or how does that work?
I do. It's been difficult. It's been really difficult, and I do overlap them because otherwise I would never, ever, ever get any weekends off. So I'm the scheduler, believe it or not. I schedule all the hospitalists, and I schedule all the OB providers, and the only way that I can make it work. I'm actually thinking about writing a post about how to schedule doctors, and I was going to call it, you know, how to herd cats, because it's not easy.
No, yeah, I'm in a five-person family practice group, and I do not schedule. I don't want to schedule. I'm like, this is my time off. And but, you know, I'm the junior guy, so I'm like, you know, I'm like, get whatever vacation is left, whatever. But, yeah, it's got to be tough to schedule.
It's really it's awful because if there is an unsolvable problem, I usually schedule myself. So I tend to be on call a lot. And I probably should give it up for that very reason, but I can't. I'm a control freak. I can't let it go.
Oh my gosh. Well, let's switch gears here and start talking about the blog. Let me reset things here. If you're just joining us, where the heck have you been? This is the Dr. Anonymous show, and I'm of course your famous host here. And if you'd like to join the show here, the number here is what the heck is the number? 646-716-9514. Our guest is Rural Doctoring, Dr. Teresa Chan. And let's talk about the blog here. So when did you start reading blogs? When did you start knowing about blogs? How long ago was that?
Well, it's funny, I've had like this broken up blog history. I actually started a blog when I was a resident, a family practice resident, and that I think was in 2002. Yeah, I think 2002. And I ran that blog for about 2.5 years, and I let it lapse. And it lapsed right when I moved to the community I live in now, and I was starting my new job, and I was, you know, developing my reputation in the community and, you know, being a real doctor. And
what
I didn't
was it? Was it a personal blog? Was it a topic blog? What was that about?
Well, you know, this is way back when in the, you know, the early Pleistocene era of blogging, and people just blogged about whatever. I was blogging about medicine. I was blogging about knitting and spinning yarn, which are some of my hobbies. And, you know, I'm mainly connected with a whole bunch of amateur bloggers who were knitters and spinners and who were interested in reading about my adventures being on call. But then I let it lapse, and I think it lapsed in late 2004, and I didn't really read many blogs between 2004 and starting this blog in last May, or this May, I should say. And it was really amazing to see when I did start investigating blogging again how far it's come. It used to be so difficult to put a blog up. You had to know a fair amount of HTML, and none of the photo hosting services would let you, you know, link to a blog or link your photo to a blog. And it's gotten a lot more sophisticated, it's gotten bigger, it's gotten a lot easier. So I thought I'd jump back in.
So what first drew you towards blogging as something to do?
Well, I like to write. I think I'm originally a writer rather than a physician. I mean, I think I'm more naturally a writer than a physician, and I wanted an outlet. I think that when I was a resident, I felt, you know, isolated somewhat from people who shared my interests, even though I had a lot of great, you know, fellow residents, but we shared, you know, residency and medicine in common rather than arts of any kind.
Loner.
And similarly, sorry, go ahead.
Loner, by yourself. You know, come on. You can say it.
Well, it feels like you're by yourself.
That's how all bloggers are. Come on.
I guess we're all isolated, lonely, desperate people who just need to get our voices out there.
That's why we only, you know, communicate electronically and not in person.
You? I feel like I'm too. I don't know. Maybe it's what stands in for social interaction in the modern era. But resuming blogging really was about resuming writing again for me. I kind of went through this. It's been a difficult year for me professionally, and, you know, I did some values clarification, and I decided I really wanted writing to be part of what I did every day in my profession. And so I decided to blog again, and that's how Rural Doctoring got started.
Yeah, a lot of bloggers, especially doctor bloggers, either at some point kept a journal or was writing or even had some formal training as far as journalism or something like that. Does any of that resonate with you at all? Or?
Yes, it does. In fact, I started keeping a journal again in 2007. I've been kind of an on and off journaler. And now I'm back to writing in a paper journal as well. And so I think that there's this drive, you know, there's this drive for me to kind of explore my thoughts and where I am. And it's actually very helpful and for me in discovering what's important to me. And so, for example, discovering that writing needed to be part of what I did every day was something that came out of that journaling practice.
Now, when you started rural doctoring then, I mean, did you kind of have a vision of what you wanted to write about, or did you just kind of sit down and start writing?
No, I planned it. I planned it because I had my experience of writing my first blog at Labs, and I knew I needed some momentum. I needed to know I needed to know where I was going for the first few months. And so I had I sat down and I wrote down a lot of ideas about what I wanted to write about. I read a lot of medical blogs. I Googled doctor blogs and hospitalist blogs, and I found Dr. Anonymous, and I found Kevin MD, and I found the Happy Hospitalist and MedRants and a lot of the blogs. And I thought, huh, this is great. You know, there are all these doctors blogging now, but most of them seem to be talking about policy from, you know, the top down, and they seem to be writing from, you know, larger cities or at least, you know, larger communities. And I wanted to write about what I was doing. So therefore, I chose rural doctoring as my title and what I'm focusing on.
And I probably asked you this already. Now, did you grow up in a rural setting, or because usually people who practice in a rural area, that's what they're familiar with, and that's where they grew up, and that's where they want to go back to.
Yeah, I didn't really. I was born in Berkeley, and I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, so that's southern Arizona, and that's not a small rural community, although it's very different now than it was then. It was very spread out. It seemed like a small town, and I really wanted to live in a big city. And so when I went to college, and after college, I moved to San Francisco, and I lived in San Francisco, and I was a city girl. And I think I got sick of it. I just got sick of it. I got sick of traffic and road rage and looking for parking and everybody being very impersonal and in a rush. And so by the time I entered medical school, I decided, no, I want to change. I want to live, you know, with some space, and there's a little bit of a different pace to life. So I'm sort of an adopted rural person rather than a native rural person.
Okay. And a question that I always like to ask is, you know, the decision to use your real name or to not use your real name on your blog, did you have any thought about that, or from the start you said, this is who I am, and even though you don't use your name as a title of the blog, you know, it is in your about page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My first blog, my original blog, I posted under my own name, so it never really occurred to me to post anonymously or under, you know, a tag name, or to exclude my name, I should say, from my blog. Since then, I've thought a lot more about anonymous blogging because I see more of it, and I just don't think that I have it in me to be anonymous. I can't keep secrets. And, you know, for example, you know, I'm the kind of person to say, you know, whatever you do, don't buy that digital photo frame for Christmas because that's what I'm giving you. No, you have to wait 2 months to get it. I'm just not the kind of person who will sit on a secret. And I don't know how far I could take the deception. I mean, if people started guessing that I was the rural doctor, well, how far do I actually actively lie about it? I don't know if that comes up for you guys who blog anonymously, but I just didn't see myself handling it very well.
When I first started, now I'm the worst anonymous doctor out there now. So.
I see your face.
I put my face out there, you know, I have a show and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, I think, you know, we've all learned, and I've learned that, yeah, you're really not really anonymous out there. And at some point I'm going to say, hey, this is who I am, and, you know, could be like, okay, whatever. Go back to being anonymous. that's always a question that's curious to me. So when did you start your blog? When did you start this latest blog?
this latest blog I started on May 15th. I don't know why I said, okay, I'm going to start in mid-May. I just set a deadline and I started it. So it's been, what is that, 2.5 months?
Yeah, yeah. And now you're huge. You're so well known out there now. So I'm so very happy for you.
Well, thank you very much. It's kind. I'm really amazed actually at how many people are reading this blog now. I don't know how huge I am, but it's nice to have the network and to have so much to think about and write about.
Now, how do you come up with ideas for posts?
I sort of decided early on that I would have some standing posts. You want to think of them as columns. So the birth stories, the cases, and I read on another sort of general blogging site that having a post series is a way of keeping momentum in your writing, and that has actually been really useful for me. So every so often I'll start a series and say, okay, I want to talk about this over the next few weeks, and it gives me something to write about. So when I do have time, I don't sit there going, oh my gosh, what am I going to write about today? I have a topic. I'm also starting to really read other people's blogs, and there are a lot of things that I say, hey, that's a really interesting topic. I might put my voice in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, people are talking about night float systems today because there was that post in Slate magazine about night float systems, and I had a night float system. I thought it was great, so I'd like to write about that.
How do you describe a night float system for people who don't know what that's about?
Oh, for people who don't know. Well, it usually comes up in residency programs, and it's a way of limiting residents' consecutive work hours. So instead of having people, the residents, take overnight call and potentially work a 30 or 36-hour run or shift, you have daytime residents and then you have night float residents. And so what happens is there's a sign-off time, usually 7 p.m. or 8 p.m., at which the night float comes in and they just take over responsibility for your service. So the daytime people can go home and get some sleep. The way my night float program worked, we did night float Sunday night through Thursday night. We ended on Friday morning. And we worked 8 to 8, and we covered everything. And that allowed all of the residents, it was a FP-only program, but all of the services, surgery, medicine, peds, ICU, NICU, OB, got turned over to night float, and we ran it. And then everybody came in and picked it back up again at 7:30 the next morning.
Yeah, I didn't have that when I was a resident.
When I was a resident,
millions of years ago, we worked those 500 hours, and we loved it.
Yeah, I can tell. You know, I have done more 36-hour shifts since I've been in practice than I ever did when I was a resident. So
Exactly. Yeah, there's no attending work hour rules.
For sure there are not.
at least not yet.
We have work hour rules, but no, I don't think it will happen.
I have my opinions on resident work hours, but I'll probably share those on another time when I have like 2 hours to vent. I don't like them. I don't think they're. I think they've significantly changed how residents are trained, and I never thought they were a good idea. So,
right.
But you know, what are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do? You can express your opinion on your blog, and maybe people will take note.
Yeah, maybe that'll be an interesting post there. Now I really do enjoy your birth story posts, and I think when I look at your blog, and I'm looking at it right now, I mean those are probably the most popular and maybe even the most discussed, most commented on posts. Those are great stories that you have there.
I have so many birth stories, and I feel this incredible compulsion to talk about them. I think everybody who attends birth does. We tend to sit around and talk about war stories, war stories are probably what take up most of the time, but a lot of us like to say, oh, she had a beautiful birth, it was a terrific birth, you know, and when I say that, I mean, it's like a shorthand between all of us, but, you know, a lot of people don't ever get to witness a birth, or if they do, it's one very specific experience, but women have all different kinds of births. Stories, and it's really, I think that's one of the reasons why I like attending births, is I get to witness them and be part of it.
What would what would somebody maybe not know about, you know, about being a physician who delivers babies? What there's I know this is really kind of on the spot, I know. There's a lot of perceptions out there. There's a lot of things, especially in media, as far as, you know, stereotypes of physicians and things. And, have you had patients ask you about some of that stuff that they see on TV and things like that?
I think there's a lot of birth shows on TV these days. I mean, the Learning Channel and Discovery Health and all that stuff, they all have a birth show, and they tend to film them at these huge hospitals where everybody gets an epidural. You know, I mean, everyone gets an epidural at 3 centimeters, and so you have these births that are incredibly regimented, and, you know, there's a lot of counting and push, and, you know, not a lot of screaming, not a lot of drama, which is probably a good thing for filming. But I get the whole range, because we have a lot of people who want a natural childbirth, and a lot of alternative practices, and so, you know, I get much more of that vitality of birth, and so I would say that not, you know, delivering babies is not the same everywhere. It's been an education for me in, you know, water births and home births and people squatting and standing up and wanting to push on the toilet and that kind of thing. It's been a major education for me.
I mean, what do you do when you get a request, you know, like that, that either that's, you know, not standard practice where you're at, or just something that your gut feeling is saying, maybe we shouldn't do that?
It's hard, because where I live, a lot of people are very into alternative health practices, and there's a very strong home birth community, and I'm not opposed to home birth, but I worry about it, and I don't think people should be doing unsafe things at home. The result is that I'm more open to doing things in the hospital if it means that people will come into the hospital. For appropriate care. The one thing that I do try to talk people out of is what's called a lotus birth. Did you ever encounter that when you were?
No, I've never heard of that.
There are some people who believe that the placenta should stay attached to the baby until it falls off by itself.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it gets kind of smelly and unsightly, and it's just sort of horrible. I haven't actually had anyone insist on doing it, because it just becomes so cumbersome, but yeah. So I try to talk people out of that, just because it's messy and unsightly, and there's a lot of biohazard involved, et cetera.
Now, do you have midwives practicing in your hospital?
We do. We have a lot of midwives. There's 2 midwives in our practice, and there's several others in the community.
So how do they interact with the healthcare team then?
Well, the 2 midwives in our practice actually see patients side by side with us, and they take an equal share of call. And they, I think we have a very close collaborative relationship. We're all pretty nice, and, you know, the first layer of consultation are the family doctors. So, you know, we have a really good dialogue. And we're lucky enough in my hospital to be backed up by obstetricians who are used to working with family doctors and midwives. And so I think the dialogue is really terrific. So I think we're pretty equal as things go.
Now, I mean, I don't know a lot about midwives. Do they take part in the prenatal visits as well, or just in the in the hospital?
Yes. No, we work with we have a certified nurse midwife and a licensed midwife, both of whom see prenatal patients on the routine visits in the clinic, and then take their share of call.
Okay.
I think I put everybody in the chat room out with that whole lotus birth thing. That's pretty funny. yeah.
The chat room is distracting, isn't it? I know it's distracting to me. When I was doing my board review, I mean, I reviewed, you know, some obstetrics and things, which I don't do now. I loved it in residency. But I'd also love to let go of it after residency.
I understand.
But I reviewed some stuff there, and there's a lot of things as far as the birth process, and then after the child is born, so there's some philosophies out there that they shouldn't be in a warmer, they should be on mom's belly, and and a lot of different philosophies out there. Do you run into that with patients? Or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the overall philosophy of our labor and delivery unit is pretty, you know, it's very favorable to the patients that we see. I mean, we tend to just put the newborn baby, right up onto mom's stomach and dry them off there, skin to skin. We don't immediately weigh them. We don't take them away from mom. We'll delay the vitamin K shot, even though I really strongly recommend that and all that stuff. So we do run into a lot of alternate ideas, and it can be a source of conflict. But I think we're pretty good at practicing the standard obstetrical interventions when they're indicated. It just takes a lot of talking.
Yeah.
I don't just go in there and break waters and start Pitocin without telling anybody. I have to talk about it.
Mm, okay. Actually, we have a call on that.
Oh, who? All right.
Yeah, we'll see who this is. Oh, your fans are coming out now, so to say hello. Hey. Hello, who's this?
Hey, this is Adam. Hey, Teresa.
Hi.
In Richmond, Virginia. I've posted a couple times, Doc from Day of the Doc, brand new blogger myself. Been enjoying your blog. Had a couple of questions for you. Psychiatrist out in a semi-rural practice, and that's kind of what attracted me to your blog. Kind of have similar philosophies. You seem to be very, very flexible in your philosophy. The water birthing, for example, gave me the heebie-jeebies just reading about it. was just curious. One of the challenges that I find with having a large rural population is a lot of pressure to treat entire families. Just wondering if you get that. Now, in psychiatry, of course, it's a little bit different, but if you get that and kind of how you've been dealing with it. And the second question I had for you was, you know, how has your blog reading and posting experience kind of changed, if at all, you know, what you've been doing practice-wise?
Okay. Well, they're very good questions. I think I confronted the, you know, will you treat the entire family question more when I was doing primary care. And, you know, that's part of the model of family practice. So I actually welcomed that at the time that I was really trying to be a full-time family primary care physician and like a part-time hospitalist. It comes up a little bit less now, although I often take care of grandma in the hospital and then, you know, the pregnant granddaughter will want me to be at their birth, and it's a little easier to handle because I can explain the call schedule and how it's hard to commit, and, you know, if I've been up the night before, you're probably better off with someone who slept. But it used to come up all the time, and it was hard when my practice was full. It was very hard for me to say no, and I usually didn't, actually. It was nice. In many ways, it's nice to keep a family together within family practice. I think it would be harder for a psychiatrist because you have to maintain, you know, a degree of confidentiality in between family members, obviously. So
yeah, and they do like to talk about each other.
They do, and they probably are hoping that you will tell, you know, sister so-and-so to butt out of my life or whatever it is that the issue is. So I can imagine that creates a conflict. As for blogging, I don't know. Not most people don't know that I'm blogging. I haven't made a point of telling everybody. And even though we have internet and people are reasonably internet savvy, I think a lot of people are not terribly curious and haven't searched and haven't found me. I'm waiting for some fallout. I have to be honest with you. I'm waiting for some fallout from that rural hospitalist series that I did, which is probably the unkindest thing I've written so far. So I think that's something that you know, watch this space and we'll see. I try to be careful and I try to be respectful and be balanced in my opinions, but I'm waiting for some fallout.
So, Adam, you're a new blogger. What's your URL? We want to check you out here.
It's on Blogspot. It's Day of the Doc. All one word, of course.
Day of the Doc.
Cool. Yeah. It's just it's one of those deals. You know, I had things that I'd like to say, and so I say them out there. Of course, I do it still anonymously, just mostly for not having a slew of patients getting on there and taking over the blog and creating their own group therapy. You know,
what kind of doctor are you?
I do psychiatry, but it's mostly neuropsychiatry. A lot of dementia and a lot of work with people with developmental disabilities, et cetera, brain injury, things like that.
Mm-hmm. What drew you into blogging?
I'm sorry. Well, I just kind of had gotten online and looked at a couple different blogs. Just started about 4 months ago, 5 months ago, and actually your site, Dr. Anonymous, and a couple other MD blogs out there. You know, certainly were interesting, and like I said, it's one of those things where you know, having a invisible audience is kind of nice, just to put thoughts out and see them in print.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fairly passive blog. It's a you know, a hobby or an interest, not something that will probably expand into a large area. Although I think Teresa may be looking at hitting big time eventually, but she's got some mad skills. You know, she's got stuff going to different feeds and things like that, and you know, all sorts of cool pictures, and so it's a very impressive blog.
Oh yeah, yeah,
thank
yeah.
You
so God. So do you talk about patients on your blog?
I've just recently started relating kind of patient experiences. You know, and you know, again, trying to keep those things as anonymous as possible. But again, it's a random mixture of thoughts. It's not what I'd call a straight medical blog. It's just kind of my blog, kind of in the old school of web logging, almost journal-like at times. And I find that nice and personal.
Yeah, that's kind of how mine has kind of evolved as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's one of the nice things with rural doctoring is, you know, it's telling stories. I hope to do more of that. Right now I'm still I've got ideas rolling around in my brain and trying to filter them. I'll probably get into more of the storytelling as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
That would be great.
Well, great. Hey, thanks a lot for the call, and
you
are welcome on this show at any time. I'm going to take a read of your blog. And don't be surprised to get an email about me from me. And
well,
have you back
on
the show here?
I've been catching the shows, been enjoying them.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just first time to actually call any of these sort of things. So, but I was interested because I've really enjoyed Teresa's blog.
Well, great. Yeah, I appreciate you taking the leap there, because we have a lot of people who are chicken in the chat room who won't call in. I'm like baiting them. I don't know if they really work at all. But dayofthedoc.blogspot.com, Adam from Virginia, thanks a lot for calling in. So you are welcome back anytime.
Have a good evening.
Okay, we'll see you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, that's cool.
So how did that feel, taking a caller there, huh?
Well, it's new. I'm amazed that people. I'm still amazed that people read my blog. So, you know, I know you guys do, and I read your blog. But when somebody brand new reads my blog, I'm always amazed by that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I was reading some of your comments there, and you're getting some international comments too. And how does that feel?
I think it's cool. I'm learning a lot actually from people's comments, and. Which is good, because I'm trying to expand my own, you know, my knowledge base and my perspective. So I think it's great. I love hearing about rural practice in other countries. It's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about that little post that you wrote there about the job. The post that that caused you to Twitter on more than one occasion after that about considering about changing or quitting or, you know, significantly changing your blog. How can you talk about a little bit the background of that specific post? I forget what that was called, but I
can't remember. It was a little mini series about my hospitalist programs and the fact that the one I've been working for seems to be collapsing, although some things have changed since then, and I was considering some others. And I laid them out as models because I don't think, well, the hospitalist as a medical model is pretty new, and I don't think people, you know, had a really good grasp on it. And a lot of the big hospitals are staffed by a huge agency, and we are finding our own local solutions to the problem. What I laid out in that post was a lot about, you know, how the compensation worked, whether there was profit sharing with the hospital, what the hospital was like, what it would be like working for a big corporation rather than a local organization, And, you know, I think I went out on a limb a little bit on a couple of areas. One was that I was pretty critical about one of my coworkers, whom I called Rita. So that was a little dicey.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing was probably going into a million details about profit sharing and the behavior of my home hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talked about how they paid us late, and they did. They paid us late for 2 months in a row, and it was really tough. And the reputation they had, you know, contractually with other physicians. So I think I probably stepped out on a limb there. I had a reader write and say, hey, be careful, you know, and mention the flea incident, et cetera. And so I really thought about it, but I decided not to take those posts down. I am waiting to see.
Yeah.
I'm waiting to see if anything happens, especially, you know, because this hospital thing is going to get resolved, and I'll see if anybody discovers the blog.
Mm-hmm.
I also got interviewed by ACP, the American College of Physicians Internist magazine, and that's going to be appearing in September or October. And if anybody bothers to read that column, I think that they're going to check out the blog and maybe discover those posts.
Oh yeah, they interviewed me and unexpectedly. They interviewed me about 2 months ago, and I think they're looking for a real name. So I think I will be. I will be saved from that embarrassment. Being an ACP, so I don't know about that. So that'll be an interesting experience.
Okay.
Let's see. So we have someone else here. I think everybody in the chat room knows who this is going to be. So, hello. Who's
hello?
This?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hey, Teresa. Dr. Rob.
Dr.
Hey,
Rob.
It's the famous Dr.
The
Rob.
Famous Dr.
No,
Rob.
I'm
graced
not
us
as
with
famous
his presence.
As you are.
I think you're more famous. You've got the New York Times in the palm of your hand right there.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I know, man. You know, we're, you know, you're, well, welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you. That was all very kind of a weird experience, truthfully.
Yeah, talk about that. Let's, we'll grill you about that before we let you ask any questions. So how did that whole New York Times thing go? Did they contact you? Did they call you? What was the deal with that?
Yeah, I kind of wrote out that one post about obesity, and it was actually one of the faster ones I wrote, and she just picked up on it, and I had commented on her blog, and she had, I think, quoted, I mean, I had gone a little back and forth with her before, so I knew that. Actually, earlier she had mentioned my blog when she was just talking about Dr. Z blog. Anyway, she said, is it okay if I did a thing on it? And that's fine. But then I went on vacation, and it happened right when I was on vacation. It was really, it was very distracting from my vacation.
Oh, God.
So, what did it end up being, the New York Times thing?
Well,
for people who don't know.
She just did a post about my post, basically talked about the fact that, you know, a lot of people think that one of the ways that you deal with obese patients is to shame them or at least, you know, keep telling them every time they walk in the room, even for a sore throat, that they need to lose weight. And I don't think so. I think actually the best way is to get them feeling comfortable coming into the office, and then you have more opportunities to work with them. Anyway, so she wrote about that, and there was about 700, over 700 comments about the whole thing.
Because you're so provocative.
Yeah, or controversial, I don't know. But anyway, it was fun. I mean, and then after she did that, she actually asked me if I, you know, what I thought about patients who are angry at their doctors or doctor-patient relationships, and so I just jetted off a letter to her as well, and she put some of that in an article that she actually put in the regular New York Times, so that was kind of cool too.
Wow, man. Well, you're such a rock star, man. I want to be like you when I grow up.
I know, me too. Dr. Rob writes so from the heart. You know, I think that's what the tone of that post really caught people, because I agree absolutely with you, Rob, that we shouldn't be guilting and
well, yeah, Teresa, this is your show here. So, Dr.
Yeah,
Rob,
that's
what
right.
do you like about Teresa's blog? There?
Yeah.
Well, I just like the diversity where she kind of goes into the very practical. It's got to be the most organized blog writing that I've ever seen. I mean, for me, I'm very zen, and she's just very organized. And I mean, it's a nice variety of good stories and good advice. And, I mean, again, I agree with Kevin. She's just a great writer.
Well, I appreciate that. I am a little obsessive about my editorial calendar, but otherwise nothing gets written. So.
Yeah, well, I don't think you have any danger of that. You're a pretty prolific writer.
Wordy. The word is wordy or verbose, I think, is probably the case.
Well, speaking of wordy, I think we have Enrico on the line here.
Enrico!
Enrico, is that you there, buddy?
How did you know it was me?
Because you are the man. Hey, how was Hurricane Dolly, man? I want a Dolly report.
I am such a slacker. I am such just a shameful, person who doesn't get things posted.
Yeah, we know
like
that.
This.
How was the hurricane?
I could have been on CNN by now if you've been blogging the whole thing.
Exactly. Actually, I think it's in syndication. It's been so long. It was really good that it kind of went, took a little slight northwestern turn there at the end for where I was located.
I'm sorry. Where, for people who don't know, where are you located?
I'm in McAllen, Texas, which is about 7 miles north of the Texas-Mexican border, sort of at the tip of Texas. Between, if you look at big cities on the map, McAllen will be between Brownsville and like Laredo, but it's all the way down at the southern tip of Texas. And so, basically, for people who like beaches, South Padre Island is right there. That's the southern tip of the beach that's on the coast. And basically, Dolly came in right on South Padre Island. And it was intended to go basically follow the Rio Grande River, which would have taken it right down where we are. But it took a slightly northwestern turn. And so we were spared the full brunt of the hurricane force winds. We still got quite a bit of nastiness, of course. But like I said, it was a Category 2 just before it made landfall, and it got downgraded really quickly once it hit land. And so it wasn't too bad. I mean, a Category 1 will definitely do some damage, but it's not unless – I mean, you usually hear about really bad stuff across the border because drainage isn't as good. There's a lot of – once you go west from here, you get a lot of mountainy regions, and you get a lot of mudslides and a lot of casualties. So we're kind of fortunate. So it was okay. It wasn't too bad. You'll see posts and there's a bunch of broken trees and, a few roofs that got, de-shingled and, things like that, but no human casualties or anything like that. So that was good.
Now, I'll have to cut you off because I totally blew off Dr. Rob and he had a question. So I'm sorry, Dr. Rob. Go ahead.
Well, that's all right. You didn't blow me off. Just Enrico's presence really does it.
I feel the love on the show tonight, as usual.
Yeah, there's lots of love. No, I guess my question was just the whole rural versus urban thing. I mean, for me, rural medicine, I don't know, that always kind of scared me because you don't get as many of the specialists around, you don't get any. I mean, what really drew you to be a rural doctor? I mean, I honestly, the times that I worked in rural ERs, it meant that you were kind of on your own. What do you like about it better than you like about city medicine?
Well, I think I had an idealized notion of rural medicine, and I'm going to confess here that I was a huge Northern Exposure fan, and I thought that, wow, I'll move to a little town, and it'll be a band of eccentrics, and I'll be the only doctor, and I'll get to do everything. And it's sort of true. I mean, I live with a band of eccentrics, and I get to do almost everything. There's definitely a downside to it because I have to do almost everything. I think that I felt that there would be the best chance for me to practice full-spectrum family medicine in a rural area, and that would mean the obstetrics and the inpatient stuff and doing procedures. And I think that has been true. You're right, though, that it can be scary sometimes when there are no specialists. I've had a few incidents recently when I couldn't get a urologist to save my life. The ENT guy was on vacation, and I had this woman with mastoiditis come in, and she had like a rip-roaring meningitis as well, and I was worried about her. So it can get a little hairy, but I will say that it's doable, and it certainly expanded my skills. So I think I started with a very romantic, idealized TV notion of what it would be to be a rural doc, and the reality's been different, but good, worth staying.
Yeah, because I just always felt like you wouldn't have a life. I guess you doing what you're doing now makes it more possible because you're pretty much like any other hospitalist, right?
That's right. And it has gotten better. I will say that it's harder. I wrote about it a little bit in my vacation post, which is, by the way, a response to your vacation post. I'm so inspired by that. but I did write about how hard it is to, if you just happen to be at home and you have a few days off, if somebody will call you up and says, hey, can you help me out by holding the pager for this or covering me till 2 p.m.? It's so hard to say no. And then you get swept up in some big dramatic thing that keeps you there for hours and hours and hours, and it tends to cut into vacation or days off. So, yeah, it's hard to have a life.
Yep. Well, I think it's hard to have a life for any doc, truthfully.
That's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. Teresa, how big is your hospital? I forgot to ask you that.
Very small. I think that if you filled up all the beds, it would be 70 beds. We're usually only staffed for about 30. And so it's small, and our hospice program actually sees most of those patients. There's a few that are covered by private doctors. But you get the full spectrum of disease, that's for darn sure. We get some pretty sick people.
I presume you don't have residents there.
No. Wouldn't that be nice? We're a teaching site for one of the osteopathic medical schools, and they have their medical students up right now.
Okay.
But no residents yet.
Okay.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I have two, actually. A serious one and a fun one. The serious one. What?
Your choice, serious or fun.
Oh, okay, the serious one. Because you're in a rural area, and I'm, for the most part, also in a rural area, so I see this myself. I'm curious of what it's like in other places, other states, et cetera. How much, deferring to, like, I guess what you'll call mid-level providers, like PAs, FNPs, and things like that, do you see them sort of, like, having a lot more autonomy or, that sort of thing than what you may have seen when you were in, San Fran or other places?
I think mid-levels, they probably get a little bit more autonomy in a rural area, and they probably get a little bit too much autonomy for them. Most of the mid-levels I work with have a pretty good sense of, okay, here's my comfort level. I'm not going to cross it. There was one practice that basically lost their doctor, and their mid-levels were working almost solo and just had telephone contact with the fill-in doctors. And that was a little scary for them, I think. I don't see them taking a greater role, although there's a lot more opportunity for them to kind of carve out a niche. So I know one physician's assistant who does only urgent care, and she works for one of the surgeons, and she's his first assist and rounds for him and that kind of thing. So there's good opportunities for them. I think people worry that family medicine is going to lose out to mid-level medicine. And I think that's
what that
word.
Word up. Are you down with it?
Sorry, go ahead.
I think there's a real fear.
Family doc represent.
I still believe in it as a specialty because there's definitely, 2 years, or 1 year or 2 years of training versus seven. There's a lot more depth in our experience, and I think in rural areas we're still going to need family doctors, but I don't know. I don't know what the shape of that's going to look like. You might have more family doctors like me who provide, slightly higher level services that mid-levels really can't do.
Mm-hmm. What's your fun question there, Rico?
Well, I thought about it, and I realized it's not as much of a question as much as it is an opening to discuss, but I wanted to know, and I'm sure others want to know, you've been talking a lot about medicine and blogging and, how you came to blogging. But I'm interested to know, like, what takes up your time and what you like to do artistically, hobby-wise, et cetera, that have nothing to do with medicine or blogging.
Wow, I'm one of these people who's kind of like a serial monogamist when it comes to hobbies.
Wow, there's a quote.
Yeah, there you go. I'm a serial monogamist. So I tend to dive really deeply into one interest for a while. And so, you know, I already mentioned knitting. I took up knitting because a friend of mine was knitting. And then I started spinning yarn, and I taught her how to spin yarn. I've done a little bit of weaving. I'm the worst artist in the world. I can't draw to save my life, but I enjoy collaging and doing visual stuff. I think it activates my right brain or my left brain. My right brain. That's the side that I need to activate.
You cool. do it with your left hand, but it activates your right brain.
Well, I have no idea what I'm doing, but that right brain, though, we need to work on that. And let's see, I enjoy Shakespeare. I enjoy going to the theater, so I'm kind of a theater buff. I don't know. I tend to go, gardening. Gardening was huge the last two summers. I didn't put in a garden this year because I tend to become so obsessed about it that, you know, I'm up until 2 o'clock in the morning in the potting shed. I don't really have a potting shed, but my makeshift potting shed, so I decided to rein myself in this year. So I do a little bit of everything. I'm kind of crazy.
Cool.
Well, I'm going to get off the phone, but can I point out that she will be hosting after Dr. Gurley gets done with Zippy. He's going to go on to visit our rural doc.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, Dr. Rob, before I let you go here. To tell people about Zippy and what's the deal about Zippy? I'm going to post Zippy's URL in the chat room here.
Well, Zippy is a rubber lobster that my daughter, actually my 9-year-old daughter and I decided we'd blog about. So we started doing that, and I got the idea that it was a fun enough thing that it would be really fun to send it around to all my blogger friends, and, you know, thinking about people all over the country and all over the world with VJ and Bongi and other folks like that, and just thinking how much fun we could do doing pictures of him in all different kind of places, and then it kind of evolved into this idea that maybe we could raise money for something, and you know, that's what we ended up doing is actually from what Dr. Smack and her son getting brain cancer, that kind of inspired me to look into that type of thing. So it's really kind of dedicated to Henry to some extent. So it's just been kind of a fun thing. And now I just got Dr. West to make some T-shirts and mugs, and I have a mug on the way and some bumper stickers too. So it's pretty cool stuff. Somebody volunteered to do the logo and did a really neat job on it too, actually.
I think it looks great. I'm going to get some of the pet dishes, I think. That's more me.
Well, if you know Zippy's people, I would love to get Zippy on the show sometime. If you know if you can help with that. I know, you know, he's got a tough schedule, you know, and he's in great demand. But if there's any way you know, you get Zippy on the show, I'd really appreciate it.
I think that would be fine. That would be a lot of fun.
All right,
Dr.
Rob.
Good to talk to you.
Thanks
see you
a
later,
lot.
Rob.
So that was the famous Dr. Rob. His blog is distractable.org, and Zippy is funwithzippy.com. So yeah.
I'm so excited about the Zippy thing. I'm thrilled about Zippy. I'm thinking about activities for Zippy.
What kind of activities? What would be Zippy appropriate activities?
I don't know. I got to find out what kind of dude he is. You know, I mean,
maybe you should post about it and see.
Oh,
take a poll.
Yeah. I'm going to take him to the beach. I might take him with me on call. You know, maybe he'll meet a newborn. I'll have to ask the parents' permission because, you know, crustaceans and newborns. But,
I'm
looking forward to this.
I mean,
don't traumatize Zippy.
What's that?
Don't traumatize Zippy.
You know this, Enrico, and you know, Zippy never called me or you. I mean, what's up with that?
Well, actually, Zippy is tentatively scheduled maybe one day to make his way down here once Dr. Rob is confident that, you know, we're not going to be involved in any illicit activities at the border.
Oh, my
I want the Zippy border picture.
That's all I want.
He thinks I'm going to go take him to, like, a prawn show or something. I don't know what he thinks I'm going to go do. But
I'm not feeling the love here. Maybe people think I have the Zippy hater pants on or something. What's what is up with that? I don't know. Maybe I know the wrong people or something. I need to.
You need to have your people talk to his people.
Maybe that's it. Maybe I'll read a post about it.
you need to find out what Zippy needs. You know, he has his particular, you know, little things he likes to have while he's on tour, you know, on the bus and whatnot. And
of course, it is Ohio. I mean, you know, nobody wants to come to Ohio, so I totally understand that.
I think Zippy's a baseball fan, so you can always tempt him with that.
He's pretty open-minded. He's like a very open-minded little crustacean. That's what I like about him, you know. New experiences. That's our Zippy.
All right. Well, thank you, Teresa. Great to hear your voice finally. And, of course, we all love your blog, so do I. So,
great to talk to you, Enrico.
Chatting. All right, take care.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye. All right. WorldDoctoring.com.
Yes, I'm a .com.
Do you have any closing thoughts for us? Well, before that, I think you tweeted recently that you're maybe looking for another job, or was that just people to get to listen to the show, or what? Like a ratings thing, or what?
Oh, yeah, right. It's a ratings thing. Stay tuned. No, I'm probably going to change my hospitalist job, and depending on what shape that takes, I'm starting to think about the future. I don't think I have it in me physically to keep this up for, you know, 25 years. I might get another degree. I've given some thought to our friend, our Twitter friend, Sim Tim. Tim Sturgill is taking the bar. He's finished taking the bar, and I'm interested to see what his law experience would be like, because I've always had an interest in the law as well, but I don't necessarily obviously want to be on my feet in court all the time. So it would have to be something that would build on my healthcare experience, but nothing's committed. A lot depends on whether I'd like my new hospital position. So nothing new. I'm going to hang out here and roll.
Okay. So you have any closing thoughts for us this evening as we quickly get through the show? I can't believe it's been over an hour.
I know. It's been over an hour. I told you I'm wordy. Chat.
Nah.
No, I think you have completely sucked all the thoughts out of me.
Wow, that's quite an achievement.
A thought leech.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. The blog is www.ruraldoctoring.com. And Teresa Chan, thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it. I also appreciate you stopping by and stopping by the chat room, listening to the show, and putting up with my Ustream antics when I go live there. And been very kind to me. I really appreciate it.
Well, you've been very kind to me. Thank you for having me on the show.
We'll definitely bring you back at some point, and then we'll talk about the Zippy or something.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That would be fun.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Hey, enjoy your vacation.
I will. I'm looking forward to a few more days of sleeping.
Okay. Well, we'll talk to you soon. Take care.
See you. Bye.
All right, kids. So that is Dr. Teresa Chan from Rural Doctoring. I'm going to take a short break here and have some closing thoughts, so don't go anywhere. Be right back. I wish I had a Diet Coke, because I'm really craving one. I'll be right back. All right, welcome back. We have 15 minutes, and I just wanted to share what I've been doing over the past month. Well, let me before that, this evening. This evening, you can see, for those people who are listening live or seeing me live, that I am not at Dr. Anonymous World Headquarters. I am at a undisclosed location, which I already disclosed, which I'm at work. So I was about 3 hours before the show. My internet went out at home, and been just very frustrated trying to get the thing back up. So it got to 60 minutes before the show, got to 45 minutes before the show, so made the executive decision to come up to the office where I still have to work on some stuff for my day here and finish that up. So that is why I am on the phone here in my webcam and not at home. So, so yeah, I can't believe that. But yeah, but backing up to how my month is going, and thanks a lot for the 11, 12 people who are still in the live chat room. I really appreciate it. So I've been I was preparing for my boards the whole month, and which is actually really silly because people are telling me it's silly. You're going to do awesome. You do great. And I got through the whole month, and you know, as typically happens, you know, just the whole test examination process. Yeah, it just kind of freaks me out a little bit. So going into the last week, you know, just kind of, you know, I told myself I was not gonna read anything. I was just kind of try to chill out, and that was pretty much successful. And the night before the exam, you know, of course, you know, nobody sleeps well. I didn't sleep well. And I shared a little bit about on the DrAnonymous.com kind of my day, which I won't go through the whole thing again. But the thing I want to highlight or lowlight is the last thing. I got through my last question. I got through their stupid little survey, and I got to the checkout desk, and they had to finger scan me out of the test. So I gave me a little fingerprint thing. And they said, oh, well, your test has not been completed. I said, what do you mean? I got through all the questions, got through the survey, I did my fingerprint scanning. What's the deal? So we tried to do that again. And then they did the genius thing in calling the help desk. And I was on hold, or we were on hold. Actually, the tech was on hold. I was there being upset. On hold for 40 minutes, 40 minutes, and finally got to talk to a human being, and then was on the hold again for another 10 minutes. So I'm done with the test, and it is almost an hour later, and I'm still not out there, and I'm still not at the bar. So they're on the phone here, and the tech was, I mean, she was wonderful. She was very nice. She was so apologetic. I knew it was not her fault at all. So she was, you know, trying to be, you know, she was very nice, and got off the phone with the help desk, wherever it was, and they said, oh, well, everything will be fine. And that's it. Everything will be fine. What is that about? I mean, that's 8 hours of my day, and they tell me everything's fine. Yeah. Oh, okay. I have a lot of confidence in that. So they tell me that it's going to be between 4 and 6 weeks before I get the results. If I don't get them then I'm going to be very, very upset. But now, you know, it's less than a week. I'm still happy. So I just wanted to get it done. I don't have to take the thing, hopefully, for another 10 years. So that's kind of my boards story. And in the middle of that, in July also, I've been doing some soccer doc things. For people who don't know, I'm the team physician for our local boys high school soccer team. And we went to camp in Columbus, and I shared a little bit about that on my blog. And that was a good time. It was hot. It was a hot day in Columbus, a hot weekend in Columbus. It was 95 plus. And on the field, it was, I think, over 100 degrees. And it's not like I was running around, you know, on the field. I mean, it was just hot just to stand there. I don't even know how these kids got through it. But they're great kids. And last week after my boards, they had a preseason tournament. And that was a good time last weekend. And it's been a very, very busy July. And coming up this weekend, I'm going to Kansas City, Missouri, for the big resident student conference, the American Academy of Family Physicians resident and student conference in Kansas City. So I'll be flying out there tomorrow. And you can keep track of me on Dr. Anonymous, excuse me, on twitter.com/Dr. Anonymous. I always like Twittering when I'm traveling. That's always a fun thing to do. And I'm on a panel that'll be on Saturday morning talking about how fun it is to be a family physician. I mean, really, I am, really. So they put me on that panel, and I'm kind of tempted to say, yeah, I have a blog, and this is what it is. So I haven't decided if I'm just gonna just like blurt it out, come out and say, my coming out party, baby. So that'll be fun to keep track of that on DrAnonymous.com to see if actually do that. but yeah, just pay attention to my blog this weekend. I'm gonna be taking some pictures and stuff, and it should be probably, as it usually is in Kansas City in August, probably 100 degrees or something like that. So that's going to be fun. So that'll be the highlight of my week. I love working with residents and students. They really, really recharge me now that I am a seasoned doctor. I can't believe I've been working at the same job here for 7 years now, and it's been wonderful. And I can't wait to share this with all those fledgling residents and students out there. So that'll be my highlight of the weekend. So that's in a summary. That has been my last 4 weeks. I very much appreciate everyone's emails and comments supporting me and wishing me good luck on the exam and all the well wishes that I've received from everybody. I really, really, really appreciate it. It's just the show has been almost going for a year now, and my blog's been going for a couple years now, and I'm still humbled by the people, by all of you out there who continue to read my blog, who hang out with me for almost 90 minutes every week here on the show. I really, really appreciate it. You guys are the best, and thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So before closing up the show this evening, I again want to thank my guest, Teresa Chan. Definitely check out her blog if you haven't already, www.ruraldoctoring.com. And again, coming up in the next few weeks, next week for show 43 will be Alan Dappin. His website is called DocTalker, DocTokr.com. Definitely check that out before next week's show 44. Will be a live report from Las Vegas from New Media Expo. And show 45, which will be August 21st, we'll be at Doctoring Ramona Bates there. Her blog is Suturing for a Living. And on August 28th, we will be having the anniversary show for this very show. Very excited about that. So it's going to be a fun August here on the Dr. Anonymous show. So thanks a lot, everybody, for joining me on the show and on the blog, DrAnonymous.com. So everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week. I have my closing music here, and we will see you later if I can find a closing song here. All right, we'll see everybody later. Found somebody new.
Like a knife.